Hello, everyone. Welcome to a new episode of Tech Can't Save Us podcast brought to you by Literal Humans. As always, I am your host, Paul David, CEO of Literal Humans, and I'm joined today by a fantastic guest, Jing Ouyang, who's the co-founder and chief growth officer of Patchwork Health. And I'm sorry, that's Dr. Jing Ouyang. Sorry for that, Jing. And today we're going to talk about solving the NHS staffing crisis using tech. Welcome to the pod.
Yeah, pleasure to be here.
And just by way of introduction, Patchwork Health is an award-winning health tech company on a mission to transform workforce management in the NHS. Their technology enables hospitals to reduce agency spending while increasing flexibility and well-being for clinicians. Jing co-founded Patchwork in 2016 alongside Dr. Hopefully I get this right, Anas Nader. Did I get that right, Jing?
Close enough.
Okay, thank you. All right. And after seeing firsthand the challenges faced by healthcare workers navigating rigid and inefficient staffing structures, they decided to start Patchwork Health. Since then, Patchwork has grown to support over 50 NHS trusts, saving them millions and ensuring the hospitals are better staffed. Jing is not only a doctor and entrepreneur, but also an advisor, mentor, and advocate for clinical entrepreneurship. He's been featured in TechCrunch, Forbes, and the Evening Standard, and co-hosts the Out of Program podcast, where he explores unconventional career paths for clinicians. I love that. You're an experienced podcaster. Welcome to the pod.
Yeah. Nice to be a guest.
Well, so I'll try and treat you fairly because you know exactly how to go through as a host here.
Yeah,
so.
I know how the sausage is made, as they say.
Exactly. Well, appreciate that. And yeah, feel free. Any notes you have after the pod, please do send them over. Always looking to improve our podcast experience for our guests. Well, let's jump right into it. So appreciate that, you know, the work that you're doing for Patchwork, you know, with Patchwork, through Patchwork for the NHS couldn't be, you know, better timed. Obviously, you know, we're in the middle of kind of a crisis in the NHS, trying to get it to the place it needs to be and make sure it's well-funded, well-staffed. So what you're doing is critical. And we know that healthcare staffing has been a long-standing challenge and that flexible workforce management seems to be a major area of innovation right now. So if you could just kind of paint the picture for our listeners of kind of why staffing has traditionally been such a pain point for the NHS and how the landscape is currently evolving.
Yeah, I think it's worth starting by saying that this isn't just a UK-wide or an NHS problem. This is a global problem. There's a global healthcare worker shortage, and I think it's multifactorial. On, you know, in terms of external factors, you know, we as a society are, you know, increasingly living to longer ages, having more comorbidities. So the demand for healthcare and healthcare workers is increasing. On top of that, you know, you have, you know, the time it takes to train to become a clinician and the cost of training clinicians is also quite high. So in combination, it kind of creates this perfect storm where there's a lot of demand and not enough supply, unfortunately. There flexibility, and to be clear, flexibility is one strategy by which to address that. Flexibility is an area where we can try and get more out of the existing community of clinicians that we have by factoring in all their kind of wants and needs, enabling them to balance their time. So then there's a bit more resilience in the workforce. And also as well, it allows certain demographics that may not have been able to stay within the profession to actually contribute for a longer period or fill in, you know, some of the gaps. And I think that's the way that we've looked at it from a Patchwork perspective. And that's kind of our attempt at contributing towards this very complex problem.
And we'd love to hear about, you know, how have these workforce shortages like specifically impacted patient care and clinician well-being? We actually had some folks on the show previously from Preactive who were talking about, you know, kind of prehabilitation for clients or patients, I should say, and kind of getting them ready for procedures and things like that and taking pressure off the workload. So yeah, how have these workforce shortages impacted patient care and clinician well-being?
Yeah, well, you only need to look at the news to see that impact played out in stark effect. So, you know, some of the headlines that we see in the UK are patients who can't get into A&E. They're waiting, you know, 24 hours to be seen by a doctor, or ambulances and patients on trolleys just waiting in corridors because of the lack of flow through the hospital system. You know, largely due to the lack of doctors who can see them, you know, plan them and get them through the, you know, through the doors. So I think that's probably, you know, one of the most dramatic examples of how staffing shortages impact the kind of day-to-day of patients.
Sorry, just getting myself off mute there. We'd love to talk about any policy or regulatory barriers that you've seen that have made workforce flexibility more difficult to implement.
Yeah, I think in the UK, a big challenge is the training pathways. In the UK in particular, they've been quite rigid, even from my own experiences as a doctor. For example, you know, when I wanted to take some time out of my training to do a fellowship out in the States, I had to take the full year out. So my fellowship was only, say, 3-4 months, had to take the entire year out in order to take on this opportunity. So that's me outside the system. And I think this is one of the contributing factors to why, you know, a lot of clinicians are leaving the NHS at the moment, because they can't accommodate all the things, you know, we want from a rounded career, or all the all aspects of life outside of work, which means that, you know, this rigidity means that, you know, doctors choose alternative careers, which is why there's also precipitates that that shortage.
And we'd love to move into talking a bit more about Patchwork as a product, you know, and just kind of helping the audience understand how, you know, the product that you're offering is going to, or is already across 50 NHS trusts, help, you know, sort of break down some of these challenges that you just shared for us. So if you could, you know, just share some of the core features and how maybe they differ from traditional staffing models.
Yeah, so we've talked about the staffing shortage, and we've talked about the impact that flexibility can, when it comes to enabling more staffing opportunities. So enabling, you know, people from certain demographics to be able to contribute and to be able to accommodate all their different kind of work-life commitments. Patchwork, in a nutshell, is a platform that facilitates that. So when we started off the company, we wanted to create a marketplace model by which doctors could book into vacant shifts in hospitals and healthcare systems to basically plug some of those gaps. And we wanted to create almost like an Uber or Deliveroo model, so that on-demand clinicians can book and browse the shifts that they want, be confirmed remotely, and then have the visibility and control over their work. That was essentially the core idea behind Patchwork, to address the temporary staffing challenge. And from there, we've expanded to a whole range of different products that relate to workforce management. So going upstream into what they call rostering, which is essentially scheduling of workers with the right skill mix and to cover all the needs of a hospital system. And also downstream as well, you know, how hospitals source in agencies from, you know, the various different agencies that supply in workers. So we've started doing, you know, start owning more of the value chain and bringing some of the modern concepts of software. Like, for example, marketplace models, bringing kind of intuitive user experience, and also distributing the responsibilities from traditionally HR and administrators into the hands of the clinicians, so they can take more ownership of their work as well.
That seems really critical. And I'd be curious to understand how Patchwork's approach to improve both clinician autonomy, you know, hospital efficiency, how exactly does it work? How does it serve, you know, the multiple sides there?
Yeah, so I suppose I should share a bit about kind of how the idea originated, because it was born from mine and Anas's frustrations as what they call locum doctors. So doctors who pick up the vacant shifts. Essentially, as a locum doctor myself, I realized whilst I was trying to book into this work that it was a really painful and frustrating experience. Really hard to identify, you know, which departments need what work. Everything was done by email, phone calls. So there was a certain unreliability and inefficiency. And then on top of that, really hard to figure out exactly how much you get paid or to be paid reliably on time. Our thesis was that if you improve the clinician experience, then workers would be more willing, workers like myself would be more willing to pick up these temporary shifts. And as a result of that, the hospitals themselves wouldn't need to go to more expensive agencies to source in their workers. So if you think about it from that perspective, our big idea was that if you improve clinician experience, reduce a lot of the friction, the workers like me and like Anas, would be more willing to do work in the system because we've got more visibility and control, and it would be less expensive than going out to the agencies themselves. And that's how we link the user experience, the flexibility, with the cost-saving potential in a hospital. So if you extrapolate that out to all the kind of temporary workers, all the bank workers in a hospital setting, and then you incrementally increase their productivity, increase the number of shifts that they book, then suddenly you can dramatically increase your internal fill rate, as it were, and then reduce the reliance on agency. And by reducing the agency spend is how, you know, we're saving a lot of these hospitals money.
Would love to hear about, you know, specific examples you have of you know, NHS trusts that have successfully, you know, transformed their staffing models using your platform. We love a case study in the agency world.
Yeah, well, we can talk a bit about where it all began, which is Chelsea and Westminster. So what was interesting about Chelsea and Westminster NHS Trust was that we co-created our original bank solution with the trusts themselves. So at the time, my co-founder, Anas, was working as what they call the Darcy Fellow. So these fellowships are given to doctors who they want to gain exposure into NHS management. And as part of the portfolio of work that Anas received, one of them was to look at the temporary staffing service for medics, because the trust couldn't understand why their internal bank fill rate was so low, given that they're a central London prestigious university hospital. So they thought, why not get a doctor to solve a doctor's problem? So Anas was tasked with looking at the temporary staffing service. And from there, he kind of derived a lot of his insights, which then fed into what would eventually become Patchwork. So of course, Anas and I knew what the experience was like as doctors, but we certainly didn't know what it was like to be an administrator or a HR manager or a hospital exec. So because Anas took on that fellowship, he gained that insight, and we managed to convince the trust to co-create the Patchwork solution. And we took that bank fill rate, we launched an minimum viable product. We took the bank fill rate from about 30% to 90%+. And I think we saved them about 2.5 million per year just from the reduction in the agency commissions alone. That's not even taking into account the efficiencies from the digital workflows or the time release. It was a pretty dramatic improvement, given that this was us launching our product for the first time. So it didn't have all the bells and whistles, but it really did the job. And I think it proved the core mechanic, the marketplace model, which was what we were trying to achieve. And I guess from there, the rest was history. You know, we went from that single trust to 50+ NHS trusts for our bank solution. And actually, we now work with 114 NHS trusts, because we acquired a business where there was a lot of who also worked within the NHS. So now combined, we have over 100 NHS organizations.
That's amazing. So it's over 100 now. So it wasn't just 50 trusts, it's over 100 now that are involved? Yeah. Or is that, yeah?
Yeah, so 50 were with Patchwork, but recently we acquired a business that also serves in the NHS, that also, you know, has a workforce solution that synergizes really nicely with our own. So the combined organization now has over 100. So quite
that's amazing. Congratulations. Yeah, way to double your output there. Well.
Yeah, that's, I mean, M&A is certainly one way to do it.
Yes. M&A is very, very popular now. We'd love to talk a bit about, you know, growth. You know, we're a growth strategy agency, and you know, we'd be remiss in not ask about it. You've grown some significantly, as you just, you know, alluded, through M&A. You've got, you know, over 100,000 clinicians using your platform, and more than 100 million in cost savings delivered to the NHS. So very well done. You've also, as you mentioned, acquired L2P, which expands your capabilities into medical appraisals and job planning, as you just mentioned.
That's right.
What has been your approach to scaling the business? What kind of staying true to your mission? You mentioned Dave, but what else are sort of the keystones of your growth strategy?
Yeah, well, it's worth saying that scaling in healthcare is really hard. And so to some extent, we've had to, over the years, manage the expectations of being a venture-backed business alongside, you know, the realistic trajectory of working in the NHS. Because you're selling into enterprise, which is slow as it is, but then the NHS is its unique kind of organization with, you know, like nuances and additional challenges. So when we think about the scaling journey, It's been a real kind of hard grind over the past, 8 or so years from which we've been building it. I think that, in terms of staying true to the mission, I think what's helped is that because Anas and I come from the NHS, we were both doctors in the NHS, we came with a certain credibility. And I think that whilst growth was very slow, convincing early adopters was very hard, there was a certain trust from the stakeholders that we were dealing with, that Anas and myself, from our clinical backgrounds, understood the problem and that we were aligned with the culture. And I think we leaned into that heavily, and that really played to our strengths. And on top of that, because we came from the NHS and because we were doctors, that, I guess, background really permeated into the culture. So everything that we did was very much to serve the NHS. Our team is very mission-driven, not through purposeful design, but just through the fact that the people we hire are all those from the NHS who care deeply. And I think that has just manifested in the way that we operate and how our product has been developed. Another facet to that is we invest heavily in customer success or implementation, if you were to call it a different name, because we recognize that the stakeholders that we work with in the NHS are super busy. They, of course, prioritize patient care. So for them to think about learning new systems, dealing with software providers, it's pretty low on their priorities. So, when we think about how we align, and stay mission orientated, we made sure to build out an operational team that could, that could walk them through the entire customer journey and that would be with them as a trusted partner. So we never wanted to parachute technology in. And for the very people trying to, run an effective service and treat patients, we didn't want to put the burden on them to make sure that these kind of systems worked. So that's one element in which we've kind of linked the mission to our kind of growth story. And then I guess the second part of it is linking back to what I've described before about M&A. Healthcare growth is very slow. And so actually an M&A strategy makes a lot of sense. And it's great that, we found financial backers. Our investors are very bullish on M&A, which helps because I think in healthcare in particular, inorganic growth, acquiring businesses is a really good way of scaling. And we've married that up with our core mission because, we've picked partners who we think are aligned with our culture and that synergized really nicely with our product suite as well. So we've done one with L2P. Would love to do more in the future.
Love that. I love the idea of obviously picking your partners very carefully and intentionally and making sure they're aligned to your larger roadmap for growth. It's something we work on with, partner agencies we work with, freelancers, but also clients as well. So yeah, that kind of makes sense. Would love to kind of dig in a bit more about you and your career and kind of understand, your experience. I know you started your career as a doctor and have since become an entrepreneur, a mentor, an advocate for health tech innovation. What, inspired you to step outside of the traditional medical path and into the world of startups, and what advice would you give other clinicians considering a similar journey?
Yeah, I think what made me jump, I suppose, it started all the way from medical school. I was always wired, I think, a bit differently. So even from the days as a student, I was always looking at wider opportunities. It wasn't enough for me to just be a doctor, although originally that was always the intention. I wanted to have a portfolio career. I wanted to explore different things. And I guess I kind of fell into technology and into entrepreneurship, starting off, as many doctors do, with an interest in research. And I happen to have graduated from universities where many of the academics are very involved in healthcare technology. So I naturally got involved and exposed. And then I guess, I tried many different things, failed at many different things before finding the one thing that really kind of blew up. And of course, that was patchwork. But the opportunity for patchwork really came about through serendipity and through circumstance. Because I'd taken out that fellowship, because I had time where I was out of training and I was locuming, I really felt the pain points of being a locum doctor, which then inspired myself and Anas to start the business. So I guess, a combination of having the interest from the start and then kind of stumbling upon the opportunity, I would say.
I really appreciate your point about having a portfolio career, someone who started as an educator and then became a nonprofit executive. And now I'm, you know, I was a freelance writer. Now I'm running an agency all of a sudden. So I feel that very, very deeply. And I have lots of thoughts about this next question, but what have been some of your biggest mindset shifts that you had to make, you know, when transitioning from medicine to entrepreneurship?
I think it all comes down to risk, really. When you're a doctor, you're, of course, very risk adverse. You follow the protocols, you follow the rules. Hospitals and healthcare settings are designed to minimize risk because the stakes are pretty high, especially, you know, when you're dealing with patients and people's lives. When you go into entrepreneurship, you kind of flip the script because it's almost like you're pushing people to swing for the fences, to do something bold. If it was predetermined, then of course there wouldn't be the opportunity. Business is filled with uncertainty and there are no protocols by which you follow, which get you to discrete outcomes. It's always probabilistic. So I think getting comfortable with that difference, that there are no answers, there's no right or wrong, and that you are having to tolerate a much higher level of risk, that I think for me was the big mindset shift.
Yeah, that's a big one. I mean, we work across a bunch of different, you know, sectors, and obviously like fintech and health tech, like the level of risk that you take is very minimal in terms of the stuff you can put out in terms of regulatory requirements and things like that. But, you know, maybe in other areas, it's a little bit more flexible and stuff like that. So I definitely appreciate that. How do you see the role of clinicians evolving in the health tech space, just like bridging from, you know, your work as a clinician into your work as a, you know, health tech entrepreneur? Very curious about that.
I think there's enormous interest these days, which is also why I started my own podcast, Out of Program, because I was getting so many medical students and clinicians contacting me being like, how do we get into technology? How do we get into entrepreneurship? How do we work for businesses and have portfolio flexible careers? So I think certainly the appetite for doing more things has certainly increased. I think that the role of clinicians is also being recognized more so now. So there are now emerging health techs that really value the insight and the drive of clinicians. And I think the healthcare system, certainly in the UK, is now becoming more accommodating of these kind of portfolio careers, less than full-time working, where they can accommodate their training alongside exploring these the avenues. So I think, you know, the timing is right. The interest is high. I think that training pathways are becoming more flexible to accommodate. And on top of that, I think businesses, broad range of businesses, health techs and otherwise, are seeing the value in clinicians or those from a clinical training background coming into their organizations.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I guess just maybe a personal question. Looking back, is there anything you wish you had known before starting this journey with Patchwork Health, you know, based on what you've learned to date?
Sorry, could you repeat?
Yeah, is there anything you wish you'd known before starting this journey with Patchwork that you could go back in time and tell your younger self, hey, you should look out for this?
So many things. You know, when I started off, I had no background in entrepreneurship and certainly no background in fundraising. So very much had a beginner's mindset. And so Anas and I probably made a lot of rookie mistakes, wasted a lot of time, probably wasted a lot of money in the early days. So to have the experience of today and then educate myself on what it means to start and run a business, you know, that would be very welcome. But then on the flip side, I think, well, maybe if I knew all of this, I would never have gotten into the space. Because it was only when we started the business that we recognized that there was so much competition when we started out. And of course, we've gone the whole, you know, whole nine yards. A lot of our competition has fallen to the wayside. But I think if I knew as much as I knew today, maybe this wouldn't have been, you know, the domain that I would have gone into. I think sometimes you have to be a bit optimistic and naive to really make it a reality.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I mean, I sometimes look back and my journey will be about 5 years old in June. And I kind of shudder at all the mistakes I made and kind of wish I could build that time machine and go back and, yeah, just like shake myself a little bit, like, don't do that or definitely do this. Really, really appreciate that. And then, yeah, we'd love to jump into our quickfire questions where, again, this is like a chance for our audience to get to know you a little bit better. They're a bit more fun. fun and a bit more personal. I'm going to hold you to that. This is like the first, you know, word or thought or idea that comes to your mind. So first things first, you know, setting aside your great work with Patchwork, if you could take all your learnings from that and found another tech startup, what would it be and why?
I'd love to do something in fintech. My partner worked in fintech, and it seems pretty exciting to work in that space. The market opportunity, the scale is so much bigger, right? So I think it's just a feeling that I've done healthcare and health tech for a very long time. Wouldn't mind doing something different in the future if I had the opportunity.
That's awesome. Yeah, my partner also works in fintech, and I get to kind of hear those fintech stories. So it's and the scale seems massive. So
both highly regulated, but there's definitely. You know, you can build much bigger businesses just because of virtue of the funding that's available.
Definitely. It's the hot ticket. Next question. What tech innovation right now makes you the most excited? And you can say why.
Well, I'm going to be a bit cliche and say AI has really exploded. And I'm seeing so many healthcare AI startups that leverage large language models. You know, the ambient AI for note-taking. You know, there's AI tools that are really reducing the admin burden. And I think it's really applicable in the healthcare setting where some of the data is like largely unstructured. So being able to handle that ambiguity through the large language models, it opens up so many opportunities. So yeah, really excited about what that can do for healthcare, and especially in allowing clinicians to focus on, you know, the things that they're really good at, and then reduce all of that bureaucracy and that admin burden that often, you know, hinders them.
Absolutely. And then flip side of that question, what tech invention makes you the most concerned right now and why?
God, it's going to be AI as well, right? You know, the dangers of AI, you know, what we do with this data, how we can potentially de-skill our workforce. Because I think, you know, and this will probably be a challenge across all industries, is that AI has enormous power to make experienced people, you know, 100 times more productive. But what that also means is that there's a reduction in the need for more junior people to do, you know, maybe the grunt work by which you have to go through the grind in order to get the experience. You know, I'm worried about what that does for future generations in terms of their training and in terms of their skills.
Yeah, that's it's almost pointless that we ask this question because the answer is always AI. So maybe thinking about editing it these days. Appreciate that answer. Switching from AI to humans, who is a literal human who's been integral to your career journey that maybe you want to shout out?
Yeah, well, there were so many people that helped me along the way. And I think I got very lucky, because you can have all this desire to do entrepreneurship and different things, but if you also don't meet the right people who can guide you along the way, then you can really fall into a dead end. So there's so many people to call out, but I suppose the one person who's worth mentioning is probably Professor Tony Young, who is still the clinical director, the National Clinical Director for Innovation for NHS England. And he was the one who, you know, back 8 years ago, when I wanted to do all these things in entrepreneurship, it was way less common. And there were many people who would say, well, why don't you just stick to your lane? You know, just become a doctor. I think Tony was one of the first people to say, actually, no, you can do something different. And he went on to start the Clinician Entrepreneur Program, which was this large scale educational program for clinicians in the NHS to pursue entrepreneurial interests and to basically bring some of those digital skills back into the NHS as well. So he was a huge mentor in the early years. And I think, you know, he's been a real kind of force for changing healthcare to enable more kind of clinicians to become innovators. So he really kind of laid the groundwork, as it were. So, you know, I think he was definitely, I would say, a hugely influential character in my career journey.
Nice. Shout out. Would love to ask about, you know, we always find people have like these inspirational quotes that kind of drive them. So that we always like to ask this question. So what's a quote, inspirational quote that stuck with you through your journey in tech?
Yeah. I've got a good example of one. And I've actually stuck it as a screensaver. That's why it's front of mind. So it's one by Archimedes, which is, give me a firm place to stand and a lever and I can move the earth. So what I love about that is it ties the concepts of leverage and impact as well. Because when I think about why, you know, one of the motivators for leaving practicing medicine to become a tech founder, it was the idea that I wanted to make a huge impact. And being a doctor, whilst it was very gratifying seeing patients, you know, your impact is limited to a certain individual. Technology allows you to make enormous scalable impact. And that then ties the leverage, you know, the power of software in terms of how you can take, you know, an individual's effort and then scale that, you know, limitlessly. Yeah, that was always a quote that struck me, and I always remind myself of it because it ties back to impact and leverage.
Yeah, appreciate that. I think that there's a strategy piece too, and an intention piece of, like, you know, how do you get yourself into that position to have the right leverage, and that gets built over time, you know, in terms of, and it seems like you've done it with Patchwork Health, like, you know, getting to over 50 NHS trusts and then expanding strategically to reach, you know, double that. And now you have that leverage to, like, really impact the whole system. So that's incredible. You're doing it. Well done. Well, cool. This has been a really inspiring conversation, Jing, and I really appreciate the work that you've done at Patchwork, because I think it's a great example of how tech can be used to, like, improve real world problems. I think we've got a lot of tech out there that's, like, frankly unnecessary. You know, we don't need a million different types of deodorant. We need clinicians to have, you know, more support and be more well staffed and NHS trust. So, you know, you're keeping that human element at your core, and really appreciate that. So yeah, thank you for joining us, and really appreciate your time today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
And could you let our listeners know where they can find out more about Patchwork Health and your good work?
Yeah, so if you want to learn more about Patchwork, you should go to patchwork.health. That's the literal URL. You can learn more about our products. And if you're interested, you can fill in a form, and we'll arrange a demo for you if you're a hospital exec.
There you go. And to our listeners, you know, if you've enjoyed this episode with Jing, which I'm sure you have, it's been a fascinating conversation, please do leave us a review and give us a rating. It helps us bring on more incredible guests like Jing Ouyang, the co-founder and chief growth officer of Patchwork Health. Thanks so much for joining again, Jing.